Hello and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, let's just get straight to this week's album, which is from 2009, Actor by St. Vincent. N. Erin Annie Clark, better known by her stage name St. Vincent, is an American musician, singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist. After studying at Berklee College of Music, which explains a lot, for 3 years, she began her music career as a member of Polyphonic's Cree. Clark was also a member of Sufjan Stevens' touring band before forming her own band in 2006. St. Vincent's work has received praise for its distinctive musical style, which blends soft rock, experimental rock, electropop, and jazz influences. In March 2016, it was announced that Clark had signed that Clark had designed a signature Ernie Ball Music Band guitar. Unique to the guitar was the design, which Welsh singer Kate LeBond described to The Guardian as being made for a woman's body, providing pleasing aesthetic form and support of the guitarist's functions. It's a very interesting instrument. I'm going to geek out on guitar for a minute here. It has kind of a trapezoidal shape, or actually kind of more of a bow tie shape if the middle of the bow tie was shifted to the left.
I don't think it's even about a woman's body thing or anything. I think it's lighter, which means you can do more on stage with it.
Well, I've seen female guitarists using one. One female guitarist who I follow on YouTube, Mary Spender, owns one and raves about it. And she said, you know, it does physically feel better than a lot of traditional shaped guitars. I honestly think it's going to be one of the few signature models that will outlive the artist.
It's why Jack White used it when he performed on SNL. Like, apparently she wasn't aware he was going to.
Oh, wow.
So she's just sitting at home and just, holy shit, that's my guitar.
I do think, and then I don't know if it's going to outlive her in the sense of her notoriety, because I think this is my first real exposure to St. Vincent, and I think she's going to be one of those artists who were still relevant in 50 years. But
I think so too. I mean,
I think the guitar is, but I think the guitar is going to be like the Gibson Les Paul, where, you know, everybody's heard of a Gibson Les Paul, everybody's seen and heard a Gibson Les Paul. A fraction of those people who know it was named after a guy named Les Paul, and that it was a signature model, you know.
Right.
I think the St. Vincent guitar, and particularly because she uses a stage name, St. Vincent, that is going to distance the guitar eventually from being a signature model. I think it's going to, you know, be relevant, be around for a long time.
Anyway, I mean, I guess a Clark guitar just doesn't have the same marketing ring to it, or any guitar
model wouldn't be as you know, distinctive as the St. Vincent. You know, it's just going to be a St. Vincent in the future. anyway, on to the actual album, which is the review. Yes. Actor was produced by John Congleton and Annie Clark and released by 4AD on May 4th, 2009. Clark was influenced by scores to films by Disney and Woody Allen. Woody Allen is a joke, though.
I did not know that's what influenced this, but yeah.
It's obvious that it was film scores, but Woody Allen has become a bit of a punchline. to prevent writer's block, she watched films without the sound and composed music for her favorite scenes. After arranging the music in GarageBand, she wrote lyrics and added some gentle vocal melodies.
So it's what Pink Floyd did when they did Dark Side of the Moon, right?
They watched
The Wizard of Oz. No?
And apparently Rush did the same thing with Tony Antolf. Actor features Annie Clark on voice, guitar, bass, keys, etc. I'd love to know exactly what qualifies as etc. Hideaki Amori on flute, clarinet, bass clarinet, alto, tenor, and soprano sax. Apologies for the slight mispronunciation there. Michael Atkinson on French horn, and he also served as score consultant. Daniel Hart on violin and sarangi. And I looked this up before recording. The sarangi is an Indian bowed stringed instrument, which has three playable strings and I think 30 drone strings. So it's kind of a cross between a violin and a sitar. It's a bowed kind of violin style instrument with sympathetic drone strings, like 30 of them. It's a violin sitar hybrid.
Smith
on drums and Alex Sopp
every day.
And Alex Sopp on flute. I would recommend Sarangi. Look it up. It's got a very interesting sound. I want to play with them. I want to try one. So bad. And again, I want to learn to play every word instrument.
I mean, I'm fine with the three strings, but then when you get into 30, I'm kind of, my head's starting to spin.
Well, I mean, you don't know how many. Take a good look at a sitar. Notice how many bloody strings are on them. That you never play or touch. They're there to just offer sympathetic resonance with the strings that you actually play.
Oh, okay.
That you actually do play. You know, you don't play the 30 strings. They're drones.
I mean, it's why the keys on the piano are kind of like a, hey, hey, so. Oh, no,
the 32 drone strings are just there to resonate with the three strings that you actually finger.
Okay. All right. I get it.
Anyway, on to the actual tracks. A reminder, I don't edit any music into the video for copyright reasons. But down in the description, you'll find it links to Actor on Spotify and YouTube, so you can listen along with us and, you know, listen to each song before we review it. On to track one, The Strangers, opens with a very nice kind of orchestral bit, some strings, mm-hmm. and not what I was expecting from the little I know of St. Vincent's music.
Yeah, I mean, I think I picked this one in the same vein that I picked the Ted Leo album that I picked. Mm-hmm. They're both, you know, finding their sound. And I think that's always a very interesting thing for an artist. Yes. Is someone who is looking for what is it that works for me?
Right. And St. Vincent really found it, because this is unlike anything I've heard.
And right, album is the exact moment where you hear her like find it. Not necessarily here. This sounds a lot like the stuff from Marry Me, you know, the album before her first album. But until it breaks into that because I mean you kind of got that 40s cabaret thing going around a lot of the early part of the album, but this is kind of mixed with like a 70 a zeros dance bass, and then like the 70s Mellotron in it too.
A lot of Mellotron. I say it doesn't sound like anything else. I should say it doesn't sound like anything else that preceded it.
Yeah,
because I mentioned Marianne Call did a tribute to St. Vincent on the first track of Standing Stones with Bones. And Eliza Rickman did a song that sounded a lot like St. Vincent. The melody and tone of the song reminds me of Eliza Rickman, who came along a little later than St. Vincent and was clearly very influenced by her.
And then just that descent, that paint the black hole blacker.
I loved the contrast between this really light, pretty instrumentation and these dark lyrics.
Yeah,
that's just insistent percussion.
And that is her in a nutshell. It is, there's a beautiful sound to it, but if you peel back a little bit or look underneath it, holy shit.
and then this distorted guitar starts breaking in. And it just is a visual parallel. It reminds me of those scenes in Doctor Who when the wall starts cracking.
Right. The reality is just crumbling away. And oh, by the way, that paint the black hole blacker has been sampled by a rapper already.
Oh, okay.
And you put a racial tone to it. That makes a different meaning entirely.
And then we get to the instrumental break and everything just kind of picks up nicely. It's just kind of this upbeat kind of rock song almost.
You don't even hear like any hints of her guitar until about over 2 minutes into that.
Well, except for the distortion. And then, you get some guitar. Yeah, because some guitar comes in. And then on the last verse, she goes to acoustic. Whenever she went to acoustic, I was surprised.
Yeah, you never know when it's coming. It's just kind of like this. Wait, what? What are we doing? And it is a way to keep you engaged.
Because it's all of this kind of 50s stuff. I think 50s, you know, movie score stuff combined with this, you know, distorted loud guitar and the electro pop, the dance, you know, danceable stuff. And then this acoustic just shows up.
And with her lyrics, of course, there's such a sexually charged tinge to everything she does almost, you know. Playboys under your mattress.
Like in a couple of other cases, you know, this is the first time I've heard the album, so I didn't really have a chance to really grok a lot of the lyrics.
Yeah.
On to track two, Save Me From What I Want. Love these very sort of atonal, almost accordion sounding intro.
It's, first I was like, it's, kind of like the Watcher of the Skies intro, but actually, it's like more like what Banks did on one of his soundtracks for Lorca and the Outlaws, where it's just that back and forth thing.
Well, soundtrack sounds about right, because a soundtrack is there to set the mood, not to be conventional music.
Yeah. His was a bit more dramatic, but hers, I think there's kind of a intended monotony to it in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. And she's just kind of playing with tonality there.
Yeah.
I was not at all surprised when I saw she went to Berkeley, because she knows her shit in terms of theory and composition. Like, better than any other pop musician I've heard.
She's from a very musical family. When she toured, when we saw her last show, her opening act was actually her aunt and uncle, and I wish I could remember their names. Jesus Christ. It was like a singer and oh man, I have to look it up now. It was Tuck and Patty.
Oh, I've heard of them. They're jazz musicians, been around for decades. Yes. Tuck Andreas is an incredibly well-respected guitarist.
That's like her godparents. They're like her aunt and uncle. And so they opened for her.
Tuck and Patty opening for St. Vincent. That's fascinating.
Yes, this is the fucking Chicago theater. So it's like, I mean, this palace, you know.
But it starts with this sort of atonal accordion and then goes to kind of a rocky verse, like rock-oriented stuff.
It's pure James Brown.
Okay, yeah, I can see that, yeah.
Like, it's this, you know, kind of, almost, or Nile Rodgers kind of guitar, which, I mean, Nile Rodgers, James Brown.
That's where Nile's got it from.
With, like, this little twist of cabaret in there.
I can't think of James Brown's guitarist offhand, but that's where Nile's got it from.
Well, he had a number of them, a couple of them, you know.
But, I mean, the main JV's band, JV's bass. He had a steady band for a while.
Yeah.
There is also these kind of late 50s sounding background vocals.
Right.
That remind me of a particular song, but I can never, I think it's I've Only Got Eyes For You. The Shabop Shabop.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Sounds I can a lot see that. Like that. That title just came to me.
So she put like this, you know, so she's melding the cabaret. I kind of call it 40s. I think we're 40s and 50s myself, but it could be 50s too, because they're not that far apart.
Also a lot of Hitchcock era movie scores.
Yeah.
That kind of era is what it sounds like to me.
But she's merging it with like, you know, funk and James Brown. So you're just kind of like, ooh, these two together.
These pure noisy guitars.
Yes.
It's rock guitars and noisy distorted horns, which I'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
Which I love. Also the guitar, this kind of arpeggiated, kind of plucked guitar right after that verse. Has a really interesting harmony to it. I'm gonna go through full theory geek on this episode, because she is amazing on a theory level. And this is the first time I've ever, while reviewing an album, started playing air bass. I do it all the time, and it mostly for fun. But business when I'm reviewing, I couldn't resist. Nice. And yes, I play air bass because that's my main instrument. IRL. I just couldn't resist it on this one. On to track three, The Neighbors. The percussion on this is just giant. I love it.
She takes that same 40s cabaret and now puts a psychedelic spin on it, but not a, you know, nice 60s psychedelic. more like an Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. There are some fascinating time signatures going on here with this huge drums. And the vocals really stick out. I would love to know how they were recorded.
Yeah.
They're just really up front and present, more so than, and I think maybe because on a lot of her stuff, they're doubled and kind of set back.
Right.
More ethereal. On this one, they really stick out into the front, and it gets really beautifully noisy in the second verse. It just builds.
Right. I don't think you actually really, I mean, you get kind of this wind down, but really I think the wind down is this there to set up the upbeatness of the next track.
Yeah. It just kind of gets noisy and kind of trails off. On to track four. I guess this is sort of the title track, Actor Out of Work. This was the one I posted the video for. It was the only song I'd heard going into this. It's really the only one I don't love, if I'm honest.
I mean, it is like the obvious single off the album, you know?
And this is good. This is a continual criticism of mine. And fortunately, it's the only time I'm going to say it in this review. The drums and guitars just get a bit repetitive for me. It's just this steady beat that just continues through the song.
Yeah. She takes that same cabaret, but now she puts like a rocker. This is definitely where she gets the most Prince-like
on the album,
without a doubt.
I like the doubled vocals. You know, it's just this two vocals. She's basically singing the same thing twice.
Yeah.
She's recorded it twice and they put it together. Really nice ethereal feel. Love the distorted horns.
I've always
enjoyed it. Distorted horns are a revelation to me.
I mean, repetition, you know, it is an element of music that's used, you know?
Oh, yeah. It irritates me. What was that? Sorry for hitting the mic. Love the distorted horns, and I love how everything just sort of drowns out the vocal.
Yeah.
It all just builds to this crescendo, and the vocal is almost an afterthought.
But yeah, it's Prince that the side of Prince I've always liked, you know, that raspberry beret, you know.
Yeah, the more rock side.
Yeah.
Yeah. On to track 5, Black Rainbow. The title almost scarred me because that movie still scarred me.
I think she did this before the movie.
I would have to check.
I think she did. I think the movie is from like 10 or...
You may be right about that.
I think I remember looking it up last week.
For those who don't know, we're talking about a movie called Beyond the Black Rainbow that we reviewed in 20... You're right, because we reviewed it not long after it was made. It was released in 2012. That's when we reviewed it. It wasn't out for long. The most disturbing thing I've ever seen.
I love it.
I haven't watched it in 6 years. It still scars me.
I need to watch it again. So here we finally ditch the cabaret sound. Right.
And we have Mellotron.
We head to a very weird proggy area. What was that?
Really reminded me of the Beatles at the beginning.
Yeah.
Very Strawberry Field, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Love the nice...
There's that little flute, you know, kind of in there.
Yeah. Love the nice soft vocal. Like she has a really, she can, and it's not something that not a lot of singers can do. She can go soft.
All right.
And stay perfectly in key. A lot of singers lose their balance, lose their sort of sense of key when they go soft. They need the air to really stay in key. She can sing softly, beautifully. And then, you know, in the chorus, we get some more great low noisy bits, this time coming from the left, rather the right side.
Is there an actual chorus to this?
It's a repeated part after the verse. Okay. So musically, at least it repeats. I'm calling it a chorus, the B section, if nothing else. And there's this just noisy bit that kind of pounds at you from the right side. And another Doctor Who, you know, wall cracking moment.
It's more like an insect that's just kind of boring at you. Yeah, and there's this whole buildup that kind of comes into it. And you're just like, but then it just kind of just disappears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're expecting a payoff,
right,
but you're not getting one.
It just kind of pounds at you a little bit and goes. And then we get into this instrumental break with these fascinating harmonies again, proving she is in pop music. She's the new Brian Wilson.
Wow.
I will go on and say she is the new Brian Wilson.
Because right.
Brian Wilson was playing with a lot of this stuff in his day when he was, you know, before he broke. You know, he was playing with a lot of unique instruments and fascinating harmonies. And I wonder, I would love to know if he was an influence on her.
That probably.
That's the thing.
She's from a musical family. Yeah, she's been to a musical college. Right. I mean,
and Berkeley,
heard it all.
She's been to Berkeley, which is the best in the, well, it's one of the best. But Berkeley and Juilliard are the best in the world.
Yeah.
I love how it builds after that instrumental break. It really kind of becomes psychotic.
Yes, it does.
The drums just, the synth bass just start pounding at you.
You are just beaten down at the end of the song.
I have at the end of my notes, I'm going more than slightly mad.
But I've always loved her. Mm-hmm. And then she put out like some Spotify playlists with promoting the new album. Uh-huh. And she has, you know, the song New York on there, which is probably not her best on the new album. But she had a New York playlist, songs about New York playlist.
Okay.
She fucking has the Broadway medley of 1974 on it.
Nice.
How do you not love that?
The only two New York songs that coming to mind, I'd be disappointed if she put on there. I'm actually not that disappointed. Alicia Keys and Billy Joel.
Oh yeah, I can't remember. Anything else. The only song I remember on there is Broadway Medley 1974.
Up until now, I'd heard a song here or there, you know, and it was enough to kind of get a sense of what she does and appreciate, you know, how brilliant she is, but it was just different enough to say, it's just not really my thing.
I don't think I would have. I probably would not have listened to her if it hadn't been for David Byrne, honestly. I mean,
yeah, that was the first time I'd heard of her was Love This Giant. But this is I should say the beginning of a kind of trilogy.
Yeah.
St. Vincent this week, David Byrne next week, and then the two of them the next week, the following
oh,
week.
Oh, we weren't doing the two in the middle? Okay. All right.
Yeah, so it's St. Vincent, David Byrne, and then Love This
gotcha.
Giant.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah, Love This Giant was the first time I'd heard of her, and I went looking after that because I'd never heard of her. And I'd heard enough to kind of say, it's interesting. She's brilliant, but it's not quite for me. I think I needed to listen to a whole album to really kind of get my head around it and kind of acclimate to it.
No, we're only at the halfway point of this one so far.
But I mean, I the slow process through the album of just getting absolutely sold on her. Again, let's go back onto track six. Laughing with a Mouth of Blood. Love that title. And again, more acoustic. Always surprises me on this album. And this is the most rock song so far.
Yeah, you spotted acoustic on here before on this album, but I
like
think
one
this
of their
is the
songs.
First. This is like the first where it's really this prominent.
Yeah. This is the most rock song, the most kind of conventional in a lot of ways. Well, no, not the most conventional, but it's the first sort of conventional rock song in some way.
I mean, Actor Out of Work is really the conventional rock song on the album.
Well, there's one later that is, I think, a little too conventional, but we'll get to
this. Heads to like. I mean, there's some strings, but then you get like some cabaret, and then you get
this. After Out of Work is really punk, and this one really struck me as the first rock song for some reason.
And then you get like this very Jimmy Chamberlain, like early 2000s kind of drum beat in there.
And there's something really creepy about the vocals in the chorus. And I don't know what it is. There's something about the sound of the vocals in the chorus that just kind of.
Is the image of somebody laughing with the mouth of blood.
That one's actually in the verse, I think. And I loved the addition of the bells in verse two.
Yeah.
She's great at just building things. You know, as songs progress, she just builds on what she has. And in the instrumental break, there's a great, and in the last verse, there's a great balance between this mellotron and a rock band.
Yeah.
Which, even in the 60s, they didn't really try to merge. You had your mellotron sections and you had your band sections.
True, true. It's not until the 70s where they really put the two together. Well, the nice, Leo.
Well, yeah, true. There were Emerson. Cases, but yeah.
But then again, times, he's Emerson. He's an alien from another planet.
Yeah. The man knew exactly where to put a dagger into a keyboard to get the sound he was looking for.
Oh man.
I'll rephrase. He knew where to put Lemmy's dagger into. What's the other way around? Let me get the dagger from him. I
What's
think
that?
Let me get the dagger from him. I've had that backwards.
Maybe.
Anyway, just hearing that balance between the mellotron and the band was really nice. Because it was such a, you know, such disparate sounds. On to track seven, Marrow. I think this is probably my favorite, though it's hard to pick a favorite on this album.
I think this would be one of my favorites, too.
Great sort of maddening opening, orchestral opening that reminded me a lot of Psycho. It's kind of that, that that you know, the Psycho theme that I'm not going to try to sing. it reminded me of that a lot. Not the bit that Busta Rhymes sampled, but kind of the classic Psycho. And onto this sort of stark vocal with these airy synthesizer patches.
It's very, to me, it's very MIA influenced, I think.
Okay, I'm not familiar. I know they're on our list, but I haven't heard them.
You know, it's there's so many genres just swirling around here. I mean, that's why. I mean, I would always give her like the mantle. You know, taking the mantle from Bowie. You know, and just really experimenting and just seeing what's out there, what you can do with music. You know,
this is and I've been hard pressed to find who. And you always point out like who somebody sounds like. I've been hard pressed to think of anybody she sounds like. But I mean, I can see. The lineage you mentioned, Bowie.
I think,
and I don't necessarily hear Bowie in her music like she's borrowing melodies and chord progressions in a sense, or a sound per se.
Well, right, she's just taking the spirit, you know.
Yeah, she's borrowing the spirit of Bowie,
and she's taking the different personas.
Yeah.
Like each album she's done, she's had a sort of a different persona,
sort of the wild compositional genius of Brian Wilson. You know, and putting her own, you know, kind of twisted spin on it.
like before this, it was a very innocent, you know, imagining what love would be like sort of person, okay. You know, idealized. This is sort of like, oh, I don't know. This is just somebody fucking crazy, you know, just trying to stay sane. Then there's the one where the, yeah, I'm trying to think Strange Mercy, what that was. But I know for Self-Titled, she was like a cult leader.
Fascinating.
And I think she's kind of carried on with that, honestly.
There's one song I can see from, I think, the early 90s that kind of, I think she was influenced a little bit by, and it's going to sound weird, like a weird choice if you're not, if even if you remember it, Mother by Tracy Bonham.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see Tracy Bonham. There was somebody...
It's the only song of Tracy Bonham song I know. Maybe the rest of her music is similar.
I'm very familiar, at least with that album from that time. I was a big fan. I saw her live.
That's the only song I've heard, but that kind of weird, psychotic, over-the-top sound, I hear in a lot in St. Vincent.
I think Tracy Bonham, for what I remember, was a lot more peeled back than this, though. Okay. A lot rawer, you know. Whereas this is, so much. And Marrow is really where, if you want to pick a moment where she found her sound.
Yeah. This is all the bells and whistles.
This song. Like, this song is so, you know, where it began and grows now into what you're hearing.
This song is the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, starts with this maddening, insistent orchestral bit. And then the stark vocal with just these light, airy synth patches.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guitar starts breaking in, first on one side, then the other. And we get back to the distorted horns, which I need to hear more of.
It's just gloriously distorted. That's the words I could come up with.
Yeah.
With how you would, gaudily layered, but just...
Brass with distortion is a sound I never knew I needed in my life.
Well, you get a lot of that on the Love This Giant. Like she takes a lot of the sound.
I know there's a lot of horns, but I never really noticed a lot of distortion on them. In 2 weeks we'll listen to it again. And then the distorted guitars, just with these little stabs, add this second extra groove to the second verse. They just kind of complicate the groove a little bit.
And just the lyrical cry for help. it's just all complete.
Literally,
there.
Help me, I think is the chorus.
Oh yeah, H-E-L-P, help me.
And then there's just this the guitar solo out that is just pure bedlam.
Right. Oh. Yeah, it's just a storm, you know?
Yeah. On to track 8, The Bed. More surprise acoustic, and this great insistent, I initially called it a kick drum, but I think it's more of a timpani sound. It's this big drum kind of just pounding away.
Now, it's very strange, and I guess the one criticism I could come up with for this album would be maybe it needs to be balanced out a little more.
By what?
Well, like the last 4 songs of the album are all very like down tempo. Like all of a sudden, okay. I mean, like we go through this, you know, we go through the first part. I don't know if it's consciously done right in the beginning where you're kind of doing this cabaret thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, you kind of had the peak with Marrow. And now all of a sudden it's just, I mean, there's this, well, there's a Japanese influence here too, very obviously in the music. Mm-hmm. It's just very peaceful. Reminds me a lot of Steve Hackett's.
Interesting.
The red flower of, was it Tai Cha that blooms everywhere for one of his very early albums.
Very 50s on the pre-chorus.
Yeah.
With the background vocals. Very much kind of a Mr. Sandman.
Right.
Other song I mentioned earlier that I'm blanking on. Only Got Eyes for You. And then again, this great airy chorus where it's just a vocal and the very light synthesizers. This is the first album we've reviewed that I hadn't heard before that made it into my library.
Oh, really?
Love the instrumental break. It's just beautifully dramatic. It's sort of this cross between Days of Future Past and Sergio Leone.
That's... Wow. Yeah, I don't know if I picked that for this one.
I was just listening to it again, kind of refreshing my memory on my notes before we recorded. And I hear a lot of similar, the flutes and the mellotron, a lot of similar Days of Future Past kind of sounds.
like I said, if she's included Broadway medley of 1974, she's fucking familiar with Steve Hackett as a guitar player.
She's a guitar player. She's familiar with Steve Hackett.
Right.
That's what I should mention, because, you know, I'm talking about the arrangements. She is a brilliant guitarist. And she's not a shredder. She's not one of those real, you know, fast, you know, show off kind of players.
Yeah.
But she knows exactly what she's, and this is someone she's probably never going to be compared with again. But in a sense, in a particular sense, she reminds me of Keith Richards in a sense that she knows exactly what to play when.
Huh.
Keith Richards, in very, very different styles. But Keith Richards never plays the wrong note. He doesn't play a lot of notes. He just plays the right ones. And St. Vincent doesn't play a lot. There's not a lot of guitar on the album. But what she does choose to play is perfect for where she puts it.
I mean, she does play more on later albums than after this. And really, her show, what I saw, she didn't have a backing band with her. It was just machine, the like drum machine and synth that were pre-recorded.
Well, she plays most of the instruments on her albums, clearly.
Right, and it's just her with the guitar and just singing, I think, her own pre-recorded background vocals to harmonize with her. But yeah, she's playing the guitar and dancing at the same time and just all these crazy and singing. Like we're just, it was a circus act. We have no idea the fuck she was doing.
This one clip a couple years ago where she was playing guitar and kind of going back and forth with the keyboard player in this sort of choreographed bit while they were both playing and singing.
It's why the light guitar is crucial, you know, to actually be able to do stuff with it.
I should probably try one out if I can find it, because I need something light sitting down, you know.
Yeah.
This might be the one that gets me back into electric. But the instrumental break at the end of the bed, I hear, you know, in addition to the flutes and the mellotron, the very kind of moody blues thing.
Yeah.
There's this good, the bad, and the ugly kind of rhythm to it. guitar, Sergio Leone guitar. I hear that kind of rhythm to it as well. I think that's just why that combination struck me. On to track 9, The Party. Probably my least favorite on the album, other than Actor Out of Work, because it's just really conventional.
It's a very straightforward ballad.
On any other album, I'd probably like it. But after all of that insanity, it's just kind of...
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. This,
at least the verses.
It's exactly what I'm saying. That maybe this should have been peppered throughout the album rather than just...
Maybe.
Having four, you know, down tempo songs back to back to back, but maybe there was a point to that I missed.
I did like the kind of odd melody in the triple meter in the chorus. It gets really compositionally interesting, and that chorus gets really big and repeats after the second verse. And that's just the outro of the song, is this beautiful kind of wordless vocal melody, and this triple meter and this huge snare drum. I'm a bass player. I'm a fan of drummers. So a good drum sound is you know, the best thing in there is for me. And then particularly interesting snare sounds. And the snares on this album are just enormous. Track 10, just the same, but brand new.
Which is, I mean, I guess a fitting title for it, because it has a very standard kind of feel to it.
This is the same Vincent sound, which I guess because I'm new to her sound, I still love. And particularly these slightly off-key keyboards.
But when I say standard, you could picture Frank Sinatra singing.
Oh, and that's standard in that sense, yeah. Sure. Yeah. She borrowed a lot from that era. That sort of what I kind of think of as the beginning of pop music.
Yeah.
You know, that you know, 50s soundtrack music is that same sort of thing. But those keyboards are just slightly off-key and slightly detuned, which sounds great. And in the middle of the verse comes this slightly dirty guitar that is doubled and panned to both sides.
Oh, yeah.
It has a slightly different tone on each side.
Kind of wonder, like, the technical aspect. Okay, that's what that is.
It's just two guitars
playing
the same part with just slightly different amp settings, a little bit of distortion, maybe just the tone knob set slightly differently. And they're just panned to each side, so you get one in each ear. And it's just... kind of, again, it's a bit of a Sergio Leone sound, you know, good, bad, the ugly. But it's just a little off kilter with these keyboards. And again, more keyboards in verse 2, which just add a nice build. The instrumentation is kind of ghostly in the song.
That's exactly the word I have here in my notes. Yes, is a very ghostly fade. And would have been a perfect ending to the album in a way, you know, just to like fade out this creepiness.
Particularly with these enormous drums that come in.
Yes.
I've been talking a lot about big drums, but the drums on, what's the drummer? Mackenzie Smith is playing, his or her, they're playing, I don't know, is brilliant. But just the way it was recorded, the production on this album is astounding.
And it's, you know, she's just getting warmed up.
Yeah. On to track 11, the actual end of the album, the sequel. Yeah. Fitting title for the last track.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great horns and mellotrons, more great unexpected acoustic, just has a nice build. Not a lot to say about it, the song. It's the shortest one.
It's a fragment, pretty much.
It's a fragment.
A little just, atmospheric, you know.
Just a nice reminder of the genius you just experienced.
And I mean, I would pick it as the weakest track because it is just a fragment. Yeah, yeah. So,
I think this question is a foregone conclusion. But
right,
you've been a big fan for a while. I've been raving about it. I love it. Obviously, we both strenuously recommend it. I need to listen to more St. Vincent.
I picked these because, of course, we just went through, well, which ones do I have in my starred list, you know? And, well, this one had the most, so let me just get down to where I passed by it, what I had. Other Strange Mercies, Seduction's got 5. This had 6. Okay. So yeah, I have The Strangers, Save Me From What I Want, The Neighbors, Actor Out of Work, Black Rainbow, and Marrow.
I was going to listen to Mass Seduction last night, but I figured I probably shouldn't listen to other music of hers before reviewing this one. I don't want to confuse anything.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. We'd get very confusing. Yeah.
But as soon as this episode is edited and out the door, or you know, tonight's stuff, I am going to Spotify and just marathoning her stuff tomorrow.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know which one to go with next. I mean, like, yeah, you know, the self-titled one, I think, was the first one of her solo albums that I heard. Like, you know, that came out a few years after. I just, if I had bought a copy of Love This Giant, it would have been an album that I wore out, you know, if we still were in the days of cassettes. Yeah. Or albums, you know, cassettes. Yeah, you wore out cassettes. I would have worn the damn thing out. Uh-huh. She's really, I mean, she's the artist of this decade, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I think she's going to be relevant in 50 years.
And, you know,
she's that good.
Before anyone accuses me of hyperbolic, I'll back that up with having releases in the early, middle and late part of the decades that are culturally relevant, that are, I mean, just pushing the envelope forward and just kicking ass.
When Marion Call, my favorite recording artist, puts a playlist online of, you know, what she's been listening to, and it's like 80% St. Vincent, I should have gotten the message.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for Actor by St. Vincent. If you enjoyed this video, please give it a like and subscribe if you haven't. Again, down in the description, you'll find the album on Spotify and YouTube. And until next time, we'll be reviewing American Utopia by David Byrne, his latest. Always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.